श्री श्री राधे कृष्ण गोप गोपर श्याम कुंद राधे कद गिरि गोवर्धन की जय। श्री वृंदावन धाम की जय। नवदत्त धाम की जय। राम जोहन तुलसी भक्ति देवी की जय। अनंत गौरी वैष्णव की जय। समवत्त भक्त वृंद की जय। गोप्रेमानंदी ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नमो विष्णुवराय कृष्ण सागुरे स्वामी नमने नमस्ते सरस्वती देव गौरवाणी प्रचारणी पाश्चाचलेशने श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नंद श्रीवेद गदाना शिवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 28, verse 28. Tam eva manasa vipranam babhuva pramadottama anantaram vidarbhasya raja singhasya veshmani. Tam eva manasa vipranam babhuva pramadottama अनंतराम विदर्भस्य राजसिंहस्य वैष्मनि। Tam, her, eva, certainly, manasa, by the mind, vranan, accepting, babhuva, became, pramada, woman, uttama, highly situated, anantaram, after death, vidarbhasya, avidarbha, rajasinghasya, of the most powerful king, Veshmani. At the house. Translation, King Parashana gave up his body while remembering his wife, and consequently in his next life he became a very beautiful and well-situated woman. He took his next birth as the daughter of King Vidarbha in the very house of the king. Prabhupada says, King Parashana thought of his wife at the time of death. He attained the body of a woman in his next life. This verifies the following verse in Bhagavad Gita, whatever state a being one remembers when he quits his body, that state he will attain without fail. When a living entity is accustomed to think of a particular subject matter or become absorbed in a certain type of thought, he will think of that subject at the time of death. At the time of death, one will think of a subject that occupied his life while he was awake, like sleeping or dreaming, or while he was deeply sleeping. After falling from the association of the Supreme Lord, the living entity thus transmigrates from one bodily form to another according to nature's course until he finally attains the human form. If he is absorbed in material thoughts and ignorant of spiritual life, and if he does not take shelter under the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of God and Govind, who solves all questions of birth and death, he will become a woman in the next life, especially if he thinks of his wife, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Karmana Daivanetrena. A living entity acts piously and impiously, and sometimes in both ways. All actions are taken into account. A living entity is offered a new body by his superiors. Although King Parashana was overly attached to his wife, he nonetheless performed many pious, fruitive activities. Consequently, although he took the form of a woman, he was given a chance to be the daughter of a powerful king. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita, the unsuccessful yogi, after many, many years of enjoyment on the planets of the pious living entities, is born into a family of righteous people, or into a family of rich aristocracy. If a person falls from the path of bhakti yoga, God realization due to attachment to fruitive activity, philosophical speculation, or mystic yoga, he is given a chance to take birth in the high and rich family. The higher authorities appointed by the Supreme Personality of God are thus render justice to the living entity according to the living entity's desires. Although King Pranjana was overly absorbed in thoughts of his wife and thus became a woman, he took birth in the family of a king due to his previous pious activities. The conclusion is that all our activities are taken into consideration before awarded, not the body. Narada Muni therefore advised Vyasadeva that one should take Krishna consciousness devotional service and abandon all ordinary occupational duties. This advice was also given by Lord Krishna himself. Although devotees may fall from the path of spiritual consciousness, he will nonetheless attain a human body in the home of a devotee or rich man. In this way one can resume his devotional service. Text 29, it was fixed that Vaidarbhi, the daughter of King Vidarbha, was to be married to a very powerful man, Malaya Dvaja, an inhabitant of the Pandu country. After conquering other princes, he married the daughter of King Vidarbha. The report is customary among Kshatriyas for princes to be offered under certain conditions. For instance, Draupadi was offered in marriage to one who could pierce the fish with an arrow simply by seeing the reflection of that fish. Krishna married one of his queens after conquering seven strong bulls. The Vedic system is for a daughter of a king to be offered under certain conditions. Vaidarbhi, the daughter of Vidarbha, was offered to a great devotee and powerful king. Since King Malaya Dvaja was both a powerful king and great devotee, he fulfilled all the requirements. The name Malaya Dvaja signifies a great devotee who stands as firm as the Malaya Hill, and through his propaganda makes other devotees similarly as firm. Such a Mahabhagavata can prevail over the opinions of all others. A strong devotee makes propaganda against all other spiritual conceptions, namely jnana, karma, and yoga. With his devotional flag unfurled, he always stands fast to conquer other conceptions of transcendental realization. Whenever there is an argument between a devotee and a non-devotee, the pure devotee, pure strong devotee, comes out victorious. The word pandya comes from the word panda, meaning knowledge. Unless one is highly learned, he cannot conquer non-devotional conceptions. The word para means transcendental, and pura means city. Now, parapura is but one to the kingdom of God, and the word jaya refers to one who can conquer. This means that a pure devotee who is strong in devotional service and has conquered all non-devotional concepts can conquer the kingdom of God. In other words, one can conquer the kingdom of God by only by rendering devotional service. The Supreme Personality of God is called Ajita, meaning no one can conquer him, but a devotee by strong devotional service and sincere attachment to the Supreme Personality of God can easily conquer him. Lord Krishna is fear personified for everyone, but he voluntarily agreed to fear the stick of Mother Yasoda. Krishna, God, cannot be conquered by anyone but as a devotee. Such a devotee kindly married the daughter of King Vidarbha. Translation: King Pranjana gave up his body while remembering his wife, and consequently his next life, he became a very beautiful and well-situated woman. He took his next birth as a daughter of King Vidarbha in the very house of the king. It was fixed that Vidarbhi, daughter of King Vidarbha, was to be married to a very powerful man, Malaya Dvaja, an inhabitant of the Pandu country. After conquering other princes, he married the daughter of King Vidarbha. Here we see the next life of King Pranjana. So in this story he becomes a woman because of his attachment to his wife. Fortunately, because he wasn't so sinful, he actually also did pious acts as a king. He also was born in a royal family. So he had a mixture of results due to his actions and attachments in his last life. And Not only that, then she was married, or he is the she was married to a great king who had great qualities. So that is also good fortune for her. In that way, she took advantage of his good qualities, and she could progress spiritually. So in this way, there was some arrangement for Paranjana, in spite of his attachment, so that he could progress very nicely. So this is an example of how the Lord makes arrangements. Another example, of course, is Bharat. Bharat became a deer. But by that arrangement, he also had memory of his previous lifetime. And then, in his next lifetime, he was arranged to become a Jadbharat, a Brahmana. And then he remembered the previous life again, previous life and the previous life, and therefore he became more advanced in his devotion to the Lord. So the Lord arranged these different births, and through that Bharat got great advantage because he progressed spiritually ultimately. So here we see some sort of arrangement so that King Paranjana could get some advantage. Of course, this is not a historical event, it is simply an allegory, a symbolic story. But the Lord made some arrangement for his advancement. In terms of arrangements can be made in terms of punya. If we do punya, then we get some advantage. If we do spiritual activities, then we get greater advantage because we can continue our spiritual life. It wasn't mentioned, of course, that King Paranjana had any spiritual activities, but at least he had some piety. He wasn't a completely corrupt king and whatever. So in this next life, he was born in a royal family as a woman because of his attachment, and was married to a very virtuous king. So that was, I'd say, the punyas involved there. By punya, he was able to get a very good advantage and progress. So the end result of punya, of course, is advancement upward in the gunas. But punya itself is not a complete process, as karma yoga and varnashram are not a complete process until one comes to jnana and then gets liberation. And even then it's not complete. This is not a complete process of simply doing punyas and getting a good birth and getting good advantage. However, there is opportunity within this to develop some spiritual knowledge, at least the understanding one is not the material body. So though born in the family of a king, which is technically Rajagun with some sattva in it, there is a possibility to the sattva portion to understand that one is not the material body, one is Atma. So that is why Kshatriyas are superior to Vaishyas, because they have a mixture of sattva which allows them some spiritual, higher spiritual understanding. So therefore, in spite of their attachments, there's also some detachment involved there because of this sattva mixture. Whereas the Vaishyas are a mixture of Rajagun and Tamagun, so basically not so much interested in spiritual things. The Kshatriya has an advantage, spiritually speaking, and possibility of understanding the nature of human life as being secondary to understanding Atma. However, we know that Kshatriyas themselves cannot really do jnana. That being fixed in jnana, one has to be in sattva-gun, a Brahman. So technically, the kings are not allowed to do that, the jnana process. But we'll see kings like Bharat didn't do jnana, they did bhakti. So that is an advantage of bhakti. Everybody can do bhakti. So the great kings did bhakti, not jnana. So Bharat was a devotee of the Lord. He meditated on the Supreme Lord and worshipped the Supreme Lord in his ashram in the Himalayas. So bhakti is a process which even the Kshatriya is allowed to do. Of course, we can say that in one sense, Bharat was extraordinary. He wasn't a real Kshatriya in one sense because he was so advanced that he had burned up his karmas, etc. And he was very, very pure. beyond the most of the gunas of the material world. But anyway, as far as kings in general, they set an example for others, so he would not technically take up jnana, because that would he have to take a Brahmin birth to do that. But he's allowed to do bhakti. Everybody can do bhakti. So therefore, that's what he did. Being born in a kshatriya family or a king's family is fortunate, because one has the opportunity for spiritual advancement there. Of course, not as much as the Brahmin, technically speaking, but still, one has some advantage because of exposure to great sages and whatever, as well as the mixture of sattva guna, which allows for understanding the nature of atma. And if the kshatriyas take advantage of bhakti, then they can progress very nicely in their spiritual life. Here we find that she was a woman, kshatriya family, but a woman. So though she was a, he was born as a woman in a kshatriya family, there was some advantage because of being born in a kshatriya family. There was some disadvantage because of being born as a woman. As a woman, she could not do all kshatriya duties. So the men get trained in military arts, they study the Vedas, etc., whatever. So she couldn't partake of that because she was a woman. That was, let's say, the fault of the previous life, that he was too attached to the woman, therefore he got this disadvantage in his life. But the positive aspect, besides being born in a royal family, was that she was married to another great king, who had great punya and great devotion, was a great devotee. So that was even better. She became, got association of a great devotee of the Lord. So that was an even better advantage of being born as in a royal family, was that she got a good husband who was a devotee of the Lord. So, in this way, she got advancement. Of course, in previous lifetime, Paranjana was a king, so if he's born as a king, that's nothing special, it was just the same, but as a woman, she got the association of a devotee king, so then this was some progress there. So in this way, the door to spiritual advancement was opened. And this is the motive of Narada Muni, to enlighten the King Prashanna Barishad about the real duty of the king, that he should not be too involved in fruit of sacrifices, etc. And he can do them as a duty, but he should also devote himself to understanding he's not the body and worship the Supreme Lord and develop devotion to the Lord as the final goal. This story is there to illustrate all of this, how to develop detachment from the material body, understanding one is Atma, and also develop devotion to the Lord. So the arrangements are made here for that type of progress of the King Paranjana. That was his body, yeah.
The nature seems to change.
Yeah, the first part is King Paranjana and the body, and it represents the body and the senses, etc., and enjoying in the body. This part here is like a story that he is born again, as the person is born again in another family, etc., to illustrate the fact of attachment to the material body. So that allegory is not carried on in this sense. Huh?
Another point is that the kshatriya has to take birth again as a brahmana, which means in his present birth he cannot change his varna.
Generally they don't. We do find examples within a family, for instance, in Bharat's family, Rishabhadev had many sons, I think 100 sons. Some became sages, brahminical, some became kshatriyas. And so they both had different types of children. And so some became sages, Brahminical, and some became Kshatriya. But generally, they wouldn't change in the middle. And be Kshatriya suddenly, when they're 50 years old, become a Brahmana. They would train up when they were, you know, younger, and it's one or the other.
So you understand that devotees now are rendering service in this court. Mm-hmm. That being previous lifetime, devotees rendering different service at different times.
Generally, those who have done devotional service in this lifetime were devotees, had association with devotion last lifetime. That's a general thing. They're continuing from previous lifetimes.
But also, when we talk about Varnashram, in Kali Yuga, which means it is not really practical because there is no Varna, clean Varna in Kaivalya.
No.
So that's why the whole system doesn't work.
So to introduce, reintroduce or whatever, Varnashram is very difficult to do because where do you start from? You have to go through generations and generations of breeding people or something to create them. And it doesn't quite work. And then to try to imitate, just take people out and make them into certain barns, that's not going to work either. So it's a rather difficult proposition. That's why if Iskcon tries to establish Varnashram, it cannot mean simply produce castes because that's impossible. The only thing they can do is take some of the rules and follow those rules, which are not particularly caste rules, but rules of cleanliness, rules of social interaction, those things which are beyond caste. Those rules can be followed, general rules can be followed. But to start dividing people up may be very difficult to do.
They can be sorted out upon dividing this nation?
Well, you can do that, but then it becomes like occupational things, like you go to vocational school or whatever, you go to this place or that place and you get trained up. That's what they do in the communist world anyway. You just try to find out which occupation is suitable to you. So that's, of course, logical anyway in the material world.
So you can't force somebody who's entity
to be in that. No. Naturally, they won't make a very good profession of it anyway.
And which means in that case, it can be applicable only to new born. But somebody who's born, then one can identify, okay, he has been trained, can be trained. But somebody is already 30 or 40 years old.
It's a little difficult to train him up than anything after that, because he's already been trained and you can't retrain him. Certainly you can re-educate in terms of some things, but certain habits and stuff may be difficult to change at that point.
But when the astrological chart, sometimes they say that this particular person is having this nature, dynamic in nature.
Yeah, so I mean, it's not that we can't understand natures and train people up properly. You can do that in this lifetime. But you know, it has to be done systematically. If one person doesn't, then it's not going to work. So if you want to establish the whole Varna thing, you have to be very consistent over many lifetimes to do that, to establish that. And then again, it becomes a birth thing, you know, and birth things can be introduced, so that becomes difficult to handle because we don't want a caste system based on birth. Yeah, so it's very difficult to understand what that means, because he didn't want a caste system based on birth, obviously. So we could have a caste system not based on birth, which then simply means everybody follows an occupation. But then how far are they forced to sit in one occupation all their life, and if they don't like it afterwards, they can't change? Or doesn't mean that either. So basically it means working according to your abilities, I suppose, which is natural anyway, as I said. So that's nothing special. But the other thing, when he says establish Varnashram, I would think it means certain of the rules which are favorable to bhakti, those can be followed. So we have rules of cleanliness, rules of social conduct, rules of family, raising families. There's nothing wrong with those rules. They're not contrary to the bhakti. Follow those rules.
We say in ISKCON, devotees can do all the bhakti. Devotee, sometimes in the kitchen, sometimes preaching outside.
Yeah, it's flexible.
Using all the four activities, same Aishwaras.
Yeah, a devotee can do anything. Technically, but when you get initiated, you're beyond the Varnas. That's why you get the Brahman threat, to show you can do anything a Brahman can do, but you're actually not Brahman, you're beyond the Brahman, you're higher than the Brahman, you're Nirguna, by being initiated as a Vaishnava. That's the whole idea. So then what's the question of doing Varnashram at that point? One says no, you shouldn't.
Even being married will become very difficult, because then for the right progeny to come, the husband and wife should be matched accordingly, only then the right progeny will come.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's so many complications in...
That's why they generally work by birth. It was easier to work through birth and then have rules of no mixture of marriages between the castes by birth, and then there was more likelihood you could predict the offspring's nature in general. But if we don't want to follow that system, let's be more unpredictable what's going to happen.
Or something in a fear of classifying devotees as pure devotee group and yoga group, Kanishka group, that may have been a fear of.
No, well, it's obvious the classifications are there. We have Kanishkama and Yamottama, they are there. But that's in terms of devotion, not in terms of material qualities as sattva, raja, tamas. That's different. That's only in terms of advancement of devotion and advancement of devotional knowledge.
You did mention that a woman gets married to a devotee husband. She may have all the qualifications for that. Yeah. Both of the
devotees
are supposed to be on a
purification
process. Why request women to take initiation?
Why get initiated?
Why women get initiated?
Oh, well, in the Vedic system they didn't. There was no initiation for women because the Vedas were there and they didn't get Brahma Gayatri and they didn't get Upanayana, so they didn't. So that process was not there. As far as Pancharatrika, everybody was allowed to take Pancharatrika Diksha, man or woman. As for holy name, everybody can chant, so that doesn't matter also. So those two systems, men and women, there's no distinction. But in Vedic, certainly, the women don't get.
If you say women get confused, who's the session to take? Husband is also a guru, and guru is there, Diksha guru, Diksha. If we get confused, whom to take proper instructions?
Well, there shouldn't be a contradiction in one sense. Ultimately, the guru's instruction is in terms of spiritual advancement. And ultimately, the husband's instruction should also be that. So there shouldn't be any contradiction there, ultimately. In terms of details, maybe there may be, but those are not so important.
Much do we see Vedas and Pancharatrika different? They're different, right?
Qualifications different. Vedas are only open to the upper classes, etc. Sutras cannot learn, whatever. Pancharatra, anybody can take to it. So it is more advised to take the Pancharatra path of worship in Kali Yuga, obviously. And of course, then we have the Bhagavata Marga, which is chanting the holy name. So it's another path in Kali Yuga, which is more open even than the Pancharatra system, because you don't even need Diksha.
Usually, when we see that the one Vedic family, which is every routine is part of that. But usually understanding is that there is one Veda, you know, one Vedic cloud in which at least all these things are there.
What we call Vedic, but we mean this is for want of a different word. Technically, we think of Vedic as simply mean the Vedas, and whatever goes along with it is a little misleading, because we do have Veda, Pancharatra, Bhagavata, Marga all mixed in there, which are quite different qualifications. The authority is ultimately Veda, we can say.
Between the previous
ages,
women are not allowed to read scriptures?
Vedic scriptures, no. In general. There are examples of women acharya. Gargi acharya was a famous woman acharya. So they were, some did, but it was the exception to the rule.
It means that those people are very pure, and believe that
condemnation,
instead of condemnation, we allow women to read scriptures.
No, Vedas. That was only the Vedas that are not allowed
not
to read. The Mahabharata and stuff were written for the people of Kali Yuga. So everybody can, Puranas, everybody can read. But Vedas were not meant for anyone except the upper classes.
Thank you. நீங்க எடுத்துக்கிற
சின்னது
கொடுத்துருக்கலாம்
கொடுத்துருவேன்.
Thank you.